sea in those days, and the fierce natives in their soiled robes has frightened me quite a lot. We would not be going to Tangier. Miss Gu and I slept through the afternoon. On to Dublin, and Buttercup was busily engaged in cleaning out her bedroom. Should not be able to get out, so we slept and did a bit of astral traveling. Like women the world over, whether they be women cats or women humans, I had fears. One day wake up, and find myself in some suffocating, stinking box at an airport. Voices, had people touch me and make a fuss of me. I knew that all the bad past was indeed the past, but in sleep, one fears nightmares. Then in the night the gov would take me in his arms and say, "Now, now, thief, don't you be such a silly old thing. Of course you are home and you are going to stay with us for the rest of your life." I'd purr and smile to myself and feel reassured. Have nightmares all over again. They are back. They are driving up the hill. Who wheeled around and raced me to the front door. We got there just in time as the car drew up. Got in the car, to help the gov put it away and see that the garage was properly locked. The high wall to be sure that snails were not eating away the cement. Went over the green gate and yelled at the door, "Open up." I've caught up with her and opened the door, and in they came. "Buttercup, when we were all sitting down, how did you get on?" "We went to the Moroccan embassy, but the fellow there was most unhelpful." "We shall not be going to Tangier." They lapsed into silence, and I purred to myself with pleasure at the thought. "No Morocco." "Saw Mr. and Mrs. Vett in Dublin," said Ma. "They are coming out tomorrow to have tea with us." I felt gloomy. Mr. the Irish Vett was a nice man, a very kind and pleasant man, but no vet, no matter how good, is a hero to his cat patients. He frowned. "Ears, thief, ears. Let's get out of it tomorrow or we shall have our ears done." The family went on talking, discussing what to do, where to go. As in order to get our tea, it arrived with Mrs. the Irish Vet. We liked him a lot, but his clothes smelled terribly of animals' insides and drug things. Was very interested in a big telescope the gov used to look at far distant ships. I were hidden beneath an armchair which had a frill around it, and we listened to all that was said. "She's doing very well," said the gov. "Sure she is," said Mr. the Irish Vet. "Do you think she would stand a journey to Cork, or to Belfast?" "She would indeed," said Mr. the Irish Vet. "She would stand anything so long as she knew she was wanted. She is in better health than you, anyhow." "Here, here," I muttered to myself, "all I want is to be wanted and I can stand anything." Telescope. Miss Koo rushed up to hide behind the window frame so that she could see out without being seen. "They are looking at a ship, thief," said Miss Koo. "Went on the doormat and then they came in." "Have you seen the cats today?" "Only their tails disappearing round the corner," said Mr. the Irish Vet. "I'm proud of Fifi," he went on. "She was a very good mother." And down and examined the kittens. Started to purr with pleasure. "St, shut up, you old fool." "Are you?" Night the gov was ill, more ill than usual. Gone wrong inside him. He had the same trouble as I had had and said so to Miss Gu. I'd, half amused, half cross. How could the gov possibly have a uterine tumor? "You are even more feeble-minded than I thought, thief." Day he went to see doctor, the Irish specialist. Taxi cab came to the door and off the gov and Ma went, off down the hill, round the corner, out of Miss Goose's sight and on to Dublin. Time dragged on and crawled slower and slower. We were worried. At last Miss Koo detected the sound of a car labouring up the hill. Gears were changed, the car speeded up, and then slowed and stopped at the door. Ma and the gov came in, the gov looking paler and more worn than usual, and Miss Gu hastily whispered to me, "Better not to get in the way." But the gov, I'll or not, always had time and energy to stoop and talk to his children. Vitality in his hands as he caressed me, and I felt sick in my stomach with the worry. Slowly he went into his bedroom and went to bed. At night Miss Gu and I took turns to stay awake with him. "Ms will laugh at that, thinking that animals have no sense, no reason, no feelings for others. But humans are animals as well." Every word said or thought. "Humans, but humans do not understand us, nor do they try to, preferring to regard us as inferior creatures, dumb animals, or the like. Make war on each other, nor do animals kill needlessly but only in order to eat. Nor put our fellows in concentration camps. We, Siamese cats, have probably the highest intelligence quotient of all animals. We feel, we love and often fear, but never hate. Humans never have the time to investigate our intelligence, for they are too busy trying to make money by any fair or unfair means which presents itself. As he knows himself, he can talk to us by telepathy as well as Mizgu and I talk, can, and do, talk to him. As the Gov says, humans and animals could talk together by telepathy in the days of long ago, but mankind abused the privilege and so lost the power. Animals still have that power. Days grew into weeks and the Gov did not improve. There was talk now of a nursing home, an operation. Paler and had to rest more. Very concerned nowadays and did not press to go in the garden and in private and tried to conceal our fears from the Gov. One morning after breakfast, when I was sitting on the bed with him and Miss Gu was in the window telling the seagulls not to make such a noise, the Gov turned to Ma and said, "Read this article. It tells of the wonderful opportunities in Canada. Apparently writers, artists, doctors, everyone is wanted. Might be the place for us. What do you think?" "Take the article and read it." "All right," she said, "but I don't trust any of these articles." "Holland? Possible." She laughed a buttercup. The Gov always followed the Eastern custom of consulting the whole family. "Sheila," he asked, "what do you think of Canada?" Looked at him as if he were not quite right in his head. Worked overtime giving me a running commentary on the things I could not see. "Sper, Buttercup thinks he is so ill he does not know what he is saying. Canada? Holy." Later in the morning the Gov got out of bed and dressed. Sense that he did not know what to do. Calling Miss Gu and lifting me across his shoulder, he walked out into the garden, down the garden path, and stood looking out to sea. "Like to stay here for the rest of my life, cats," he said, "but the taxmen here make such extortionate demands that we have to move in order to live. Would you two like to go to Canada?" "We will go anywhere you say." "To travel," said I. "I am willing to go anywhere, but you are not well enough." At evening the Gov had to go to doctor, the Irish specialist again. He returned hours later, and I could tell that the news was bad. However, he still had a discussion about Canada. "Ministry of Immigration or advertising in the papers," he said, "let us send for some details." "Where is the embassy?" "Marion Square," said Buttercup. Several days later wads of advertising stuff came from the Canadians in Dublin. "Promises," said the Gov. "But this is only advertising stuff," said Ma. "Call at the embassy. We must be very sure that the cats will be welcomed. I would not consider it if they had to go in quarantine or anything like that." "Evil thing anyhow." And Ma went out in the Humber and drove away to Dublin. Time always drags when the future is uncertain and when loved ones are absent. They returned. "Red tape. Red tape," said the Gov. "It always amazes me that such petty officials are so unpleasant." "These fellows across my knee and slap there. But you don't want to take any notice of them," said Ma. "They are only clerks and know no better." He sniggered and whispered, "The old man could beat him up and like it. His arms are far, far stronger than those of Westerners, and he has had to fight a lot." "Him beat him up," she sighed. The Gov was big. There was ample room for Miss Gu and me to sit on him together, nearly 230 pounds. It was all muscle and bone. "People. Probably because I never had enough food to permit me to grow to my full size." "We filled in all the forms, had our fingerprints taken, and all the rubbish," said the Gov to Buttercup. "Tomorrow I am going to take you in to see them. You have to go as our adopted daughter. You have to have a certain sum of money, someone to guarantee you, or some other bilge. The Canadians we have seen so far appear to be very childish." "You forgot to say that we all have to go for a medical examination," said Ma. "Yes," replied the Gov. "We will ask Mrs. O'Grady if she will stay with the cats. I'm not leaving them alone for anybody. They mean more to me than the whole of Canada put together." Lunch was ready, so we attended to that first. I always believed that one could discuss things more calmly after a good meal. Well, nothing was too good for us cats. She was, and is, a very small eater. She took the utmost care of her figure and she was indeed a most elegant and delightful young woman cat. The Gov. "Mrs. O'Grady is coming down the road." I hastened out to intercept her and bring her in. What Buttercup was doing, we hoped that she would be sitting in the garden, because then we would be able to go out and do some gardening. Planned for some time to uproot a few plants so that I could be sure they were growing satisfactorily. Ku had her mind set on looking at Mr. Rabbit's house. He lived in a hole in the cliffside, and often by night he came past our windows and laughed at us for being in the house. We both wanted to have a few words with him about his uncivil manner. It was not to be. Buttercup was doing something in her room, so we wandered along and sat in the room where we stored our cases. Took us out early so that we could have our say with Mr. Rabbit, who descended the cliff face about 12 feet and shouted her message through his front door to the Gov's shoulder. He would not let me go down, and shouted down to Miss Goo the things I wanted to say. Very cross at Mr. Rabbit. Then we had to do our claws on one of the trees to be just right so that we could look after Mrs. O'Grady when the family were in Dublin. We each took a bath in the dust at the end of the garden, rubbing it well into our fur. Then we were ready for a 5-minute wild chase round the garden. Miss Koo closely, because in that way she guided me and I did not bump into anything. Always took the same path, so I knew all the obstacles. "Come on in, you savages," said the Gov. Shuffling his feet and pretending to be fierce, he got Miss Koo to run as fast as she could into the house. Lifting me and slinging me across his shoulder, he carried me in and shut the door after. "There's a new grocery box here. It is full of news." Me down, and I hastened to the box so that I could read of the latest news from the shop in the village. Emily were ready to go. Peeking our ears, the Gov said goodbye to us and told us to look after Mrs. O'Grady. "Okay, we'll be safe with us. Should we put the chain on the door?" Suggesting that Mr. Loftus should be asked to come and look after her, but then I realized that the Gov would have done that if he had considered it necessary. O'Grady settled herself down, and Miss Koo said, "Come on, thief. Now is the time to do a few of those jobs which we can't do when the family is here." The way downstairs and the house thoroughly to make sure that Mr. Rabbit had not broken in to steal anything. Often Miss Goo would say, "I'll just slip upstairs and see that Viog is doing all right. We simply must look after her." He would go, clattering up the stairs, deliberately making a noise so that Viog would not feel spied upon. Would return and say, "Yep, all right." Time dragged, worse. Time seemed to be going backwards. "They are all right, Miss Goo," for the 1000th time. "Of course they are all right. I've been through things like this before." Trying to convince herself, only by the nervous twitching of the tip of her tail did she betray any emotion. "Quite well that they have to go to see a doctor, all three have to be examined, and then they have to go to a hospital to have their lungs x-rayed." She nervously licked a hand, muttering "tut-tut, tush-tut" as she surveyed her well-manicured Klaus face up to food. Food never took the place of love. Betted away, I recalled my dear mother's words to me. "Now, now, Fifi," she had said, "keep calm under all circumstances. Worry never solved a single problem. If you are busy worrying, you have not the time to see the way out of a difficulty." "They are all right, Fif. I am sure they are on the way home now, Dee," said Miss Goo. "I think we should go upstairs and comfort her." Rose and made our way along the corridor, Miss Goo leading and I following in her footsteps. Did the stairs and proceeded along the upper corridor, then flung ourselves with yells of joy at the door as it opened and the family came in. Hospital had soon detected the Gov's scars, had soon detected that he had had TB and a myriad of other complaints. "Recommendation that you be permitted to go," said the hospital doctor, "for with your education and writing ability you would be an asset to Canada." More days passed, and then the Gov had a letter which said he could go to Canada if he would sign this and sign that and report to the medical officer of health in Canada. Gov was so cross about all the silly red tape that he almost tore up the papers. Unfortunately, as we now think, he just signed them with a shrug of his shoulders. "How are we going to get the cats there with us in the plane, or none of us will go?" These fool regulations. For days they tried different airlines in an attempt to locate one which would permit us to travel with the family instead of being in a dark and cheerless luggage hold. Celine agreed that if the Gov had the family travel by first class, and paid baggage rates on Miss Goo and me, we could be in the first class compartment with them. Provided that we all travelled when there were many empty seats. Gov made it clear that he was not going to be parted from us, so he paid all the many pounds demanded. And he had another thought. We were going to fly direct to Idlewild Airport, New York, instead of flying to Montreal. Indian airline had taken us, we should have had the shorter route across Canada, but as Swissair flew direct to New York, we had no choice. The question now was, Swissair would take us in the passenger compartment, but would the American line which would have to take us from New York to Detroit. At a fear that unless everything was settled first, we would be stuck at New York without means of transport. Our affairs were being handled by a travel agent in Dublin, so the Gov had him make a definite inquiry of the American line, and if they agreed, book and pay first-class fares from New York to Detroit, and hire a car to take us across the American-Canadian border to Windsor where we were going to live. Agent checked, and finding that the airline in New York agreed to have us in the passenger compartment, paid all the fares. More to worry about. To take these receipts to the embassy, show them that you have enough money to live in Canada until you find work, and that is all there is to it. Thanks for your custom. Come back at any time, I shall be pleased to handle it for you. And the governor went to the Canadian embassy where they showed that everything was in order, got a veterinarian certificate to show that the cats are in good health. Surly Clark S., said the gov, producing the required papers. With nothing more to complain about, the officials had to issue the necessary permission to enter Canada as a landed immigrant. Now says, ruefully, we were landed all right, as in order. The governor Ma returned, tired out, to us at Howth. When we leave you will have to be in your baskets, but as soon as we are in flight you can come out and sit with us. All clear? All clear, Gov, said Miss Gu. We shall want to come out, mind. Sure you shall come out. Now stop worrying. You have cost me about your weight in gold. Both worth every bit of it. That knew some blind Irish humans who made baskets, so the Gov had a basket each made for Miss Gu and me. The absolute maximum size and gave us ample room. Suggested that we use the baskets as bedrooms for a week or so in order to become accustomed to them, and it was fun. Gov's health worsened. The laws of common sense, we should have given up the Canadian trip. Went to doctor the Irish specialist again and something was done whereby he could keep going. He had to rest more and more and I, knowing what it was to be ill and old, feared greatly for the outcome of it all. I've had hardships and suffering in many lands and now the results of those hardships were showing to him as best we could. Annan, not in the Irish train, replied the Gov. We should have to change at Limerick, and I do not feel up to that. You and Ma go to Dublin and see if you can get a garage to drive us down in a minibus or something. We will go down a day early, said Ma, because you need a day's rest before going aboard the plane. Better for the cats, too. Off they went to Dublin, leaving Miss Gu and me to sit on the Gov in order to keep him in bed. Tid for Ma and Buttercup to return. The Gov told us stories of cats he knew in Tibet. All arranged, said Ma. They are willing to take us and they have a minibus which they use for sightseeing tours. Often goes to Shannon to meet American tourists. Now there was little to be done. Oh, yet again to doctor the Irish specialist. All our preparations are being kept very secret because the press gave us no peace. Remember a short time before, when the Gov had been very ill and was going out for the first time to see the specialist. As soon as the Gov walked out of the door, a pressman drove up and started asking him impertinent questions. Gov, why pressmen should think they had some sort of divine right to ask questions. It gossips the Gov called them, and he would dearly have liked to throw them over the cliff. Bush rabbit. Some 12 feet down the cliff face. Rabbit, you're going away so don't you wreck the garden in our absence. Mr. the Irish rabbit did not answer. Contented herself with breathing hard down the hole and then, she rushed up to the top of the cliff again. Birds! Birds! Shrieked Miss Gu. Birds, we are going to fly like you. We are going to fly further. Shh! Hush! I remonstrated. We are supposed to be keeping this a secret. Now all the birds and Mr. the Irish rabbit know. Her shoulder, and I felt her stiffen. Thief! She exclaimed. Follow me, old vet face is coming. Indoors, out through the kitchen and into the coal cellar. Shuddered Miss Gu. I can almost feel my ears tingle at the thought of having them cleaned. Stealthily Miss Gu put her head round the corner, found the coast was clear, and ventured out. Voices, voices at the head of the stairs. Tranquilizers, said Mr. the Irish vet. Give them one each of these before taking them on the plane and they will rest peacefully. Special tranquilizers they are. Doubtfully, will they be all right for Fief? Oh sure they are all right for her, all right for us too, said Mr. the Irish vet. Wandered into a room and we heard no more. To risk our ears by venturing closer and getting caught. Patient at cleaning ears had been sent off to be put aboard a ship, books, some photographic equipment, and a new electric typewriter which the Gov had bought just before deciding to emigrate. The luggage which we were going to take was stacked in the hall, not much, because one could not take much by air. And I each took our own personal toilet tin, an ample supply of peat moss, which we used in place of earth, and a comforting quantity of food. We were not going to be hungry. The Gov sat talking to Mrs. O'Grady. Mr. Loftus was standing outside looking quite pale and worried. Slowly Miss Goo and I wandered through the soon-to-be deserted house, saying farewell to loved pieces of furniture. Goo jumped onto a windowsill and shouted, "Goodbye, Mr. Rabbit, goodbye birds." "S is here," said Ma. Willing hands took the cases and stowed them in the back of the bus. Mrs. O'Grady tried to make jokes to lighten the parting. He stood sadly by, surreptitiously wiping his eyes with the back of his hands, looked over the house to make sure nothing was left, then wearily he locked the front door and withdrew the key, passing it to Mr. O'Grady to send to the solicitor who was going to see to the disposal of the house. Shaking hands with the O'Grades and Mr. Loftus once again, the Gov turned away and entered the bus. The door slammed, slowly the bus rolled down the hill, away from the physical presence of the best friends we had in the world, and the corner, and started off to life. Chapter 6. The bus rolled along the harbour road, passed under the old tram bridge, speeded up and soon left Howth Castle behind us. Silent, the Gov already worn and weary, looking out at the land he loved and was so reluctant to leave. If only those tax people were not so rapacious. Silent in sympathy. At Sutton we all looked to the left to give a silent farewell to another old friend, Dr. Chapman. On towards Dublin, with the smell of the seaweed blowing in from the mouth of the River Liffey and the seagulls calling a sad farewell overhead. Rack where she could see out, "Get a good listen at this, thief," she called to me, sitting by the Gov. "We'll give you a running commentary on the things you have never seen. This is Clontarf, we are just passing the gardens." Walk in the bus. No one spoke except Ms. Goo's months of heaven in Ireland, 6 months in which to realize that I was wanted, that I belonged. "You're leaving? Leaving for what?" Hold on without jerks or starts, for the people of Ireland are very courteous and always consider the rights of the other driver. Traffic was becoming thicker now. We stopped, when the lights were against us. Suddenly Miss Goo said, "We are passing Trinity College, thief. Say goodbye to it." College. Just opposite was the travel agency which had made all the arrangements. Cancelled. Rubbed me under my chin and pulled me closer. Spinning out as we reached the outskirts of the city. The driver speeded up. "Tell you one, there was a young cat of Kildare who had catnip flowers in her hair. How can anyone think while you were there groaning away?" All was quiet, but Miss Goo was never silent for very long. Sitting up she gave a running report of all things of interest which she thought I should know about. To manage without sight is difficult. Any tired me so I slept a while. Hence a different motion and quickly sat up. "Were we there?" "I slept." "It's happening." The bus slid to a halt. "It is all right, thief," said the Gov. "We have just stopped for tea." "Halfway to Shannon," said the driver. "I always stop here, they serve very good teas." "You to go in?" said the Gov. "The cats and I will stay here." "All right," said Ma, "I will bring your tea out. Gray and Fifi can have theirs." At the same time, Ma and Buttercup left the bus and I could hear them walking the door, and they were in a shop. "Get town," said Miss Goo. "Lots of cars parked. Nice little place, people look friendly. There is an old woman smiling at you, thief. Smile back." "She's blind," yelled Miss Goo to the old woman. "She can't see you. Talk to me instead." "Sure," said the old woman, pressing her face close to the window. "'Tis wonderful craters they are and all of the little one was talking to. Wonderful what they have nowadays." "More, I've got to get Paul's tea or he'll be off to Ashornessy's." "Is right you are, I must be going," said the old woman as she shuffled off. Ever Ma came out bringing food and drink for the Gov. Our tea, too, but we were too excited to eat much. "Gov, bread and butter and a cup of tea," he replied. Better to know that he was eating even a little, so I went and had a few desultory pecks at my own tea. But how can a cat eat when she is so excited? Bulls I had had before, buffeted about in a speeding car, or drugged and half suffocated in an almost airless wooden box. Travel first class and not be parted from my family. I settled down beside the Gov and purred a little. "Beef is bearing up well," he said to Ma, I think she is enjoying it even though she would not admit it. Say something about me. Gu from the back of the bus where she was guarding the luggage and directing the driver. I don't know how we would manage without Kuei to look after us and keep us in order, the Gov said as he tweaked my ear. Miss Gu makes more commotion than all the gats of Kilkenny, he added. Droned on, eating up the miles, taking us from all we loved and knew, to, what, County Tipperary and entered County Limerick upon us now, and we had to go more slowly. The journey was long, long, and I wondered how the Gov would ever last. Who said he was becoming paler and paler as the miles went by. Nothing anymore, hours and minutes just ran together as if we were living through eternity. The bus, the swish of the tires, the miles racing up to us, going beneath us and falling away into nothingness behind. Even Miss Koo had lapsed into silence. There was no talk now, only the sounds of the bus and the sounds of the night. The miles fled into the anonymity of the darkness. Who sprang to her feet, from sound sleep to wide awareness on the instant. She called, "Are you awake?" Fingers of light are sweeping the sky, dusting off the clouds for the airplanes, she exclaimed. "Be near Shannon, we must be almost there." But now there was an air of expectancy. The family sat up and took notice. "The main entrance, are you flying tonight?" "Are resting here tonight, all tomorrow, and leaving for New York tomorrow night." "Then you will want the motel," said the driver. "They have a real smart place." He drove on a little further, made a sharp turn, and went for perhaps half a mile on an airport road before stopping at a building on the right. He went into the office. He returned to the bus. "You are not booked in there. We have to go to the one near the entrance hall. I know where it is." Quarter of a mile, and we drew up at yet another building, and found that at last we had reached the correct building. Our luggage was carried in, or the things we would want overnight were, and the heavier things were taken straight to the airport. "I want the lady's room," showing her the special tin which she had placed in the bathroom. Gently lifting me, she carried me into the bathroom and let me feel which was my tin. We sauntered out into the bedroom. We felt much better. As usual, the family had a room each, but a cup had to sleep alone. Investigating everything and making sure that we knew all the escape routes and the exact location of all necessary facilities, turned to our supper. No cat should ever be fussed until it has had full opportunity of investigating the room. Cats must always know exactly where everything is. Our sight is very different from that of humans, and the most times we see in two dimensions instead of three. To a human, we can alter our eyes so that we can magnify an object in much the same way as a human does when he uses a glass for that purpose. To our sight so that we see clearly at a great distance, or we can see things an inch from our nose. Red is beyond us, it appears silver. Blue light to us is as bright as sunlight. Best print is clear to us, the smallest insect. Our eyes are not understood by humans. They are wonderful instruments and enable us to see even by infrared light. I am told, appear to be perfect. They are of a forget-me-not blue, and they are wide open, yet they see not at all. Pulled by the drone of aircraft landing, taking off again and going far over the ocean. Next morning Ma and Buttercup went out and brought back breakfast for all of us. Eased about, Miss Koo sat at a window and admired the dresses of women passing to and from the airport. Dressed and took us to play on the grass outside the building. I was very sure that I stayed well within reach of his hands. I was not taking any risks of getting lost now. "The airport where you came from, France?" "In by the baggage entrance. I have had no experience as happy as this before." "Here we flew to Dublin Airport, but of course I was unconscious." "You and see you do the right thing. I'm an old hand at this sort of thing." "Most grateful for your guidance." Lunchtime came and Ma called us in because we had to have our food and then take a rest. The meal over, we all lay down, Miss Gu and Ma, Buttercup alone, and the Gov and me. Rested well because we did not know how well we would sleep on the airplane. "P old thing, you and Kuei run round and make an appetite for tea. Haven't explored the corridor. There is no one out there now. Come on." I jumped off the bed, scratched my ear for a moment while I thought which way to go, then found the Gov's hands guiding me to the open door. Led the way, and we carried out our scientific investigation of the corridor and analyzed the people who had passed that way. "Let's go into the reception, clerk," said Miss Gu. "We can show off. Many people have not seen Siamese cats, and I must admit at the risk of appearing immodest that we were a sensation. Pleasure when people thought that I was Miss Gu's mother. The reception office and then returned to our rooms for another sleep. All over the airport were a twinkle. When we rose again and had our supper planned and changed tonight, we gathered up our belongings, went out into the warm Irish night, and made our way across the road to the airport. Took our luggage and put them ready for customs inspection.